Our first lesson is from Isaiah. Let us listen for the word of God. Shout out. Do not hold back. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Announce to my people their rebellion, to the house of Jacob their sins. Yet day after day, they seek me and delight to know my ways, as if they were a nation that practiced righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me righteous judgments. They delight to draw near to God. Why do we fast, but you do not see? Why humble ourselves, but you do not notice? Look, you serve your own interest on your fast day and oppress all your workers. Look, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. Such fasting as you do today will not make your voice heard on high. Is such the fast that I choose a day to humble oneself? Is it to bow down the head like a bulrush, and to lie in sackcloth and ashes? Will you call this a fast, a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house, when you see the naked, to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin? Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help, and he will say, "Here I am." If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness, and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your needs in parched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in.
Our second lesson is from the Gospel according to Matthew. You are the salt of the earth, but if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter, will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. The word of the Lord.
Sometimes going to new places can allow you to learn more about yourself. I had the amazing opportunity to go to Costa Rica mission trip in 2012 with our BNPC youth program. We ran a Bible camp at a local school and met children who didn't have much, yet they were the most uplifting, grateful people I've ever met. We played soccer together, sang songs, learned about the Bible, and as I got to know them, I realized that they were truly God's children and the salt of the earth. The text compares us to the salt of the earth, but also questions what happens when the salt loses its saltiness. Salt plays a critical function in all living creatures. It regulates the water content of the body and preserves food. In the ancient world, newborn babies were rubbed in salt to heal cuts and fight against infection. Salt was considered precious, valuable, and was prized for its distinct purposes. Through its many uses, it became a symbol for purity. The text reveals that the world is imperfect and that we must obey God, represent salt, and each do our own part to better the world. As a senior in high school, I know that many times saltiness comes from the little things. Smiling, holding doors, and just being nice can change someone's day. Jesus gives us each a different way to empower our gifts and reveal our good. I've spent a week of the last 7 summers at the BMPC Youth Church Camp, where I've watched energy and kindness spread. Without electronics and hot water, we truly listen to each other, laugh, and spend time reflecting on our relationship with God. We connect and grow together. One of my favorite parts was the senior-led worship service, which was very emotional and sentimental because it was the seniors' last night ever at camp. We come back to BMPC tired and happy, with full hearts, and I think this is precisely what Jesus means in the text when he says that we can keep the earth salty to spread the love to everyone. But how do we do this today when we are so consumed with politics, social media, college planning, and our own busyness? Truthfully, it can be hard to know where God is. At church camp, there is a labyrinth, and even though I only walk in it once a year, I'm reminded that putting one foot in front of the other, being present, and being in conversation with God will keep us in our path. Seeing the good in each other and being kind will spread the love and keep the world with the salt we were born to protect.
Let's start with an anecdote. I'm sitting in my English class this year, and we're discussing a book with a plethora of biblical allusions. The teacher is trying to get us to tease out the numerous connections therein. My peers are struggling, for many of them lack a background that would help them with this. That is to say, many of them had never so much as looked at a Bible. So, the duty fell to me to timidly raise my hand and start talking about it. My classmates had a vague look of surprise on their faces to see me talking about these things. After class, a couple of them came up to me. "How did you know all of that?" they asked, still evidently confounded as to how I could possibly know the Bible. "Well, I'm Christian, Presbyterian," I responded. They were shocked. They had had no idea. Over the coming days, I came to realize that this was the case even with many of my closer friends. They didn't know that I was religious at all. I'd never talked about it. I then started thinking a bit more about this and realized that most of my peers hadn't expressed anything about their religious beliefs either. So I started looking around, interviewed a few people, and my results surprised me. Many of my peers were fairly religious. They just never talked about it. Oftentimes today, it seems as though there is a taboo on the topic of religion. It's one of the items on a list of things that isn't talked about among many people, residing alongside the likes of things like politics, finances, enthusiastic support of the Patriots. Whenever religion is brought up in conversation, many people just smile and nod without acknowledging their own standing. Often, we choose to value our standing in society over our standing with God. We've been called upon to let our light shine before others, but instead we hide our faith. But why is it taboo? There could be numerous causes. Even those not among the Presbyterian denomination can make us feel nervous about expressing our faith. Just look at the actions of groups like the Westboro Baptist Church, or even the Islamic extremists we see in the world. They do not number among those of our faith, or even among the majority of those of their own faiths. But they still make religion seem far more negative than we know it to be. Even though our faith is far different from theirs, we still choose to hide it from fear, shame, or any number of reasons. Expression of religion is a tricky field to navigate. History has many examples for us, both good and bad. We've seen such negative expressions as what the aforementioned groups have done, the Spanish Inquisition, and even the Crusades a really long time ago. We've seen the pain and chaos that these have caused, and it has frightened people. Yet we must also look at the great things in history. I doubt that I need to explain the positive impact Moses had on the Israelites he freed from the Egyptians. Speaking of freedom, religious groups were a major part of the founding of our own country. They were also a major part of the abolishment of slavery. It is easy to look back and see the darkness, but religion has also brought so much light to the world. So then, in our day, let us let our light shine in a positive way, where some of these groups will use their religion as an excuse or as a validation of their actions. We can use ours to create those good works that we've been called to do. We can show that religion is not something to be ashamed of, or something to conceal, but rather something to celebrate, a beacon of light in our era. We can become our own beacons of light, as we have been called to do, so that we can recreate the public image of religion by performing good acts in the name of our own. Let us make it something of which everyone can be proud. Let us cast away the bushel basket that is the taboo on religion. Let us put the light that is our faith on the lampstand so that all may see it and it may touch all. Let us show our good works and make them known. And let us give glory to our Father in heaven by doing so. Amen.
If you don't already know, now is a pretty stressful time to be a senior in high school. Ask anybody who spoke today, and they'll tell you the same story. A tale of college applications, final grades, and a knowledge that within a year, we will be on our own in the world, untethered for the first time. It is times like these that cause us to question our own identities and what we stand for in this world. Independent of our friends and family, we ask ourselves, who are we, what do we believe in, and how exactly did we become who we are today? The funny thing about identity is, depending on who you ask, we get 1,000 different answers to the simple question, what makes you, you? Racial identity, gender identity, nationality, sexual orientation, and more can all contribute to every individual's sense of self. But today, I would like to talk to you about a part of my identity that I have held dear to me for as long as I can remember. While this may take many of you by surprise, I am, believe it or not, a Christian. Not only a Christian, but a proud one. Before I could even remember, this church has been a second home for me. And Bryn Mawr Presbyterian has played an absolutely critical role in instilling within me a sense of community, faith, and belonging, unlike any other aspect of my life. Some of my earliest memories and closest friends were made here, just a few doors down in the education building. It was here that I was first made aware of my religion, and where I came to understand the true meaning and beauty of my faith. This church is something that I will be forever grateful for. And as I move on from my life and away from my home, I will keep this place close to my heart. But if you will allow me to speak frankly for a moment, I will tell you this. In an increasingly secular world, I believe that it is now harder than ever for this upcoming generation to practice Christianity. When those who supposedly share my faith are portrayed in the mainstream media as extremists, who disregard the central teachings of Christ and express messages of hate and divisiveness, it makes me question what others will think of me when I tell them that I too am a Christian. When certain sects of our religion emphasize promoting policies that ostracize and discriminate against those who are different sexual orientations or nationalities, it makes me fear for the future of our religion. When individuals choose to follow their own skewed agenda rather than following the example of Christ, it makes me fear for the future of this religion. Jesus was a man who associated with the most marginal groups of his time, lepers, adulterers, heathens, the list goes on and on. I believe that regardless of our political or social beliefs, we are Christians first, and that means showing compassion to everybody, bar none. Yet I fear that there is an increasing disconnect between my personal beliefs and others who share my faith, to the extent of near incompatibility, a difference of opinion that puts me and many other young adults at odds with the so-called Christian leaders on display in the news and political arena. I am proud, however, to say that this particular brand of Christianity, a brand I still feel is a minority, is not what I learned at Bryn Mawr. Here, I believe we practice something quite different, a religion based on the principles of acceptance and forgiveness, of charity and selflessness. And it has formed a foundation within me that I will be proud to build on for as long as I live. Around a year ago, I traveled to rural Haiti with an organization called Build On. Our goal was to build a school for an impoverished Haitian community in an effort to improve literacy rates and school attendance within the region. The trip was an incredible experience, as rewarding as it was eye-opening. But I can also say that without a doubt, it was one of the most difficult experiences of my life. I have been fortunate enough to see a great deal of the world, but absolutely nothing could have prepared me for what I would experience the moment I touched down in Port-au-Prince in March of 2016. Years spent under the control of an inefficient government, stemming from a series of failed elections, compounded by the devastating impact of the 2010 earthquake, had resulted in a condition of living that was difficult to say the least. You can hear about it as much as you please, but until you witness it yourself, it is impossible to comprehend. Dilapidated homes, streets lined with trash and human waste, unclean drinking water and overcrowding. I was physically moved by the calamity of the situation and felt an strange, indescribable guilt for how privileged I was, for how all my life I had taken my extraordinary, extraordinary blessings for granted. The next day, we traveled nearly 8 hours over unpaved roads to a small village where we would be staying for the next week. I would like to stand here today and tell you all that I arrived energized and eager to help. But that, my friends, would not be the truth. That evening I arrived in a village, I was exhausted, depressed, dehydrated, and deeply, deeply shaken by my experience thus far. I stood in the town center, only half conscious, listening to the mayor and his translator welcome our team, when suddenly a group of schoolchildren stood up and began singing to us. Although they sang in Creole, I recognized the tune instantly. It was a song that I have sung many times in this very sanctuary, and one of my favorite hymns, How Great Thou Art. As the children began the refrain, something inside of me stirred. I was hundreds of miles from home and a world apart from my family, yet already I had shared a connection with these people. I smiled to myself and sang the English lyrics underneath my breath. Later that night, after the sun had set, we were escorted in pairs back to our homes. My roommate Theo and I were greeted by our host family and escorted to the beds which we were to share for the remainder of the week. By this time, dehydration and exhaustion had set in full force. I summoned all the strength I could muster and staggered to the backyard, where the two of us took turns dumping cold water over our heads in an attempt to rinse off. With that, we hobbled into bed and without a second thought closed our eyes. So tired were we that we neglected to set up the mosquito net that our leaders had provided us. An hour later, I woke up in a panic. I was disoriented and anxious. My head felt like it was splitting open and my stomach churned. As quietly as I could, I rolled out of bed and pulled the rusted latch on the back door. I stumbled blindly through the night air and proceeded to get sick. For a moment, I was terrified. What had I gotten myself into? What would happen if I was seriously ill? I began to wonder myself, had I made the right decision coming to Haiti? I took a few deep breaths to steady myself and for the first time glanced up at the sky. Through my stupor, I saw a boundless black and blue canvas illuminated by millions and millions of tiny stars. It was absolutely beautiful. There was no light pollution to block them out. There wasn't even any sound. It was me and my host family's backyard and the clear night sky. Suddenly, I heard music swelling up from within me, the chorus of How Great Thou Art. And in that moment, for the first time since my arrival, I was calm. As I looked up into the sky, I began to realize that it wasn't as far from home as I first thought. For in that moment, although I was not sitting in the pews at church, I was absolutely certain that God was with me, the same as ever. And the children in the village who had sang for us, and my host family, although they couldn't speak a word of English, were God's children just as I was. And I knew, as I was standing there under the same sky that we stand under today, the sky that the Lord created, I knew that I was not alone. This is the Christianity that I learned at Bryn Mawr Presbyterian Church. As if by magic, my anxiety and sickness passed over me like a wave. I stood in the backyard looking up at the stars and singing, How great thou art, how great thou art. And in that moment, I knew indeed that I was not far from home. I wandered back to the bed and fell into deep sleep, not to be disturbed until the morning. That night, I was filled with energy and purpose. These people were as every bit as worthy of a quality education as I was, and we were there to work together to make it happen. It's funny how quickly people can change. In a matter of days, my roommate and I were both completely and fundamentally altered, simply by spending time with our fellow human beings and being open to new experiences together. We discovered how much we had in common. I think that as Christians, we can all take a lesson from this experience. As a religion, we must now move towards compassion, acceptance, forgiveness, and love. We must follow the example of Christ, who looked past the words of the false prophets and sacrificed his own life to teach us how to live ours. We too must now look past those in a Christian community whose main priorities are to ostracize members of the gay community, dehumanize and disregard refugees and immigrants, shame women who advocate for reproductive rights, and divide us deeper as a nation and a religion. For regardless of your political opinions, you are a Christian first, and it is not your job to judge. That is the job of the Lord and nobody else. Our job and our only job is to practice love and to do so indiscriminately. And here at Bryn Mawr Presbyterian Church, that is exactly what I've been taught. I will be the first to admit that I am not a perfect individual. Like all of you, I have sinned before and I will sin again. After all, there is a reason that we hold confession every week and not only once. But as Christians, we cannot achieve perfection, only strive for it. So every day, I will strive for perfection and try to live by the examples of Jesus Christ himself. I will show love and compassion to my fellow human beings, regardless of race, regardless of religion, regardless of status in society, and regardless of age, regardless of anything, really, because that is what the Lord wants of us. I will make mistakes and ask for forgiveness when forgiveness is needed. I will carry my religion with me, the religion I learned right here, and as I move on from this phase of my life and into the world, because I believe it provides me with the foundation I need to follow the path of Christ and be a decent human being. And on the day I die, I will say, "Here I am, Lord." And I will know that I was not perfect. I will know there were times when I strayed, but I will also know this. Each and every day, I woke up and I tried to live the way Jesus Christ taught us to. I gave love abundantly and acknowledged when I was wrong. I showed compassion and forgiveness because that is what Christians do. And I did so because I learned it here at Bryn Mawr Presbyterian Church. And for that, I will be forever grateful. So thank you very much. Amen.